it's an arena that is so much easier to operate at the top of the markets than people realize if they just take the steps. It's no harder to operate in the top than it is in the middle or bottom of the market. It's just a different approach. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore, and we're back with Whiskey Wednesday, my main man, Jake Sheehy.
What's happening?
Talk a little bit about what's going on in the world, some short-term rental questions, some topics that people are sending in.
So, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Before we start...
Great day to be alive, huh?
It's a great day to be alive.
It
is a great day to, be alive. Uh-huh. And so we call this Whiskey Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And we always have our, you know, all of our whiskeys, and we try different whiskeys. Some people send them in, and we appreciate that. I'm a fan of whiskey, but you can only drink so much whiskey, right?
Yeah.
There's a problem. If whiskey is taken in excess.
Right.
And sometimes we film this and record this in the mornings.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't always feel like whiskey.
Right. Right. Whiskey at 9 a.m. on a Monday could be a little tough.
Sometimes. So we've heard some, we were talking to Mr. Larry Fleet, who's a country music singer. And he said, you know, a lot of times I go out on tour, and early in my career, we were pounding whiskey the whole time. Then it started to be, we just started having apple juice, and nobody knew it was whiskey.
Right.
So we tried that a couple of times.
Yeah.
But we're like, you know, this time I said, you know what, I really like whiskey, and I like the taste of it. So I ordered me some non-alcoholic whiskey.
Right.
For Whiskey Wednesdays.
Mm.
And
thoughts?
We tried it.
Uh-huh.
And we were very disappointed.
That's really sweet of you to say it like that.
They sell it. First of all, it's the same cost. It's $45 a bottle, so you're paying the cost of like
that's $45
a medium bottle of whiskey, right? So
why?
I don't really feel like we should maybe call out the company. Maybe people can see it on the thing, but at the end of the day, it's supposed to taste like whiskey. And I like the taste of whiskey, so I'm like, I'll try this.
Yeah, but it doesn't have like the bite or even like the smell of whiskey.
No, it's just like
the color. It has
like
the color
water.
Of
it's like yeah, it's like water with some caramel coloring, and doesn't even have the aroma.
Yeah.
It tastes like a little bit of flavored water of some sort. I don't even know that it's a whiskey flavor.
Yeah, that's weak, man.
So guys are thinking, if anybody has a good non-alcoholic whiskey, I'd be open.
Because, yeah.
You know, we're not always, you know.
Trying to drink whiskey at 9 a.m. Yeah, it's kind of tough.
Sometimes that's not a recipe for a great work day.
Right.
And so,
Sometimes we
aren't really drinking our whiskey on Whiskey Wednesday. But but we tried to have some non-alcoholic, thinking, that's not a bad little. Because I've had non-alcoholic beer and stuff, and it tastes like beer.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
You can have like non-alcoholic and but
yeah, but this is just not the same.
Especially,
I mean, look at all these. Look at all the options, right? Yeah. And then you go to this, and you're like, you have a lot to compete up against, and it's not performing. It's not performing.
Teresa's like, why would you buy that? Nobody likes the taste of whiskey. So why do you?
Hold on.
So she doesn't buy into the fact that I actually like the taste of it. But So as we go off the topic of the non-alcoholic whiskey, I'm not so sure that I'm going to repurchase.
Probably not. That yeah, probably not. This will probably be the last time.
Yeah.
But anyway, we got some good stuff today, man. We're talking about some good stuff. We got some sports news. We got this interesting, you know, could be a world-ending apocalyptic scenario here going on. We don't know. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to dive into some STR questions. But first, man, I wanted to talk about this. This was the first time it ever happened to me, and I was at the airport. So I recently went on vacation to the beach. Dude, this happened to me. I thought this was probably kind of funny. This is the first time we do the checked bag, right?
Yeah.
And then we put the bag on the scale, and the guy goes, oh, you're 2 pounds over. You need to take 2 pounds out of your bag. Have you ever had to open up your suitcase in front of 30 other people and then start digging around trying to figure out what 2 pounds is?
Yeah.
That was one of the most humiliating things I think I've had to do in a long time in front of public, you know, in a public setting.
Really? Oh, yeah, I've had to do that before. We have to do it. Like, it feels like on a regular basis when we go to Alaska every year.
Yeah.
We got all of our gear, and we're like right at that limit. And depending on who's checking your bag, and, you know, sometimes they're like, you can be 3 or 4 pounds over, and they're like, no problem.
It's fine.
Other times you're half a pound over, and they're like, hey, open it up, take some out. And
this guy wasn't having it. I go, it's still going on the plane, isn't it?
Right.
Me and this bag are going on the plane. What's the problem?
Yeah.
Bro, he wasn't having it. And it was so embarrassing having to take
really
jeans.
What the hell are you packing, bro?
Bro. bro, she brought like shampoos and conditioners. We can't take that out, right? So now I'm like digging for shoes and jeans and stuff. And it was just, oh, it was so terrible.
Well, that doesn't seem that embarrassing. I've, bro, I could tell you a story that's not made for this podcast.
Okay.
That we played a joke on a friend of ours, knowing his bag was overweight.
Oh.
And we put some adult toys on the top of the bag.
No, dude.
As a joke, knowing that we were going to, he's going to have to open his bag and take some stuff out. So we put a 10 pound weight in there
some toys in there.
He didn't know.
I'm going to do that to my friends now.
It was kind of funny. That was embarrassing for him.
We thought
it was hilarious. So your jeans are, just know that wasn't probably that big of a deal.
Yeah, that makes me feel a little bit better that it wasn't something like that. But all right, so here we go. This is like the world-ending news right here. So scientists from astronomers. This is great news, bro. Astronomers at Harvard are saying that there's an object the size of Manhattan hurtling towards Earth. And the danger it possesses isn't what you're thinking. According to the new study, the space object may be an alien spacecraft. Ooh. That can attack our planet possibly November 2025. So that could be it.
Hey,
that could be it.
Could be it. We might get attacked, or they might be friendly. Who knows?
Like, I don't know. See, that was the fun conversation, right?
Yeah, right. What if they're just friends? Like, if aliens are coming in and say hi? Mm-hmm. Maybe we make them some barbecue or something. See if
That's a hilarious point. Let's think about this. Say aliens come. Say that they're like they want to be destructive, but then we throw them one of those like trays from Texas barbecue from Franklin's or whatever, and they try and they're like, you know what, you guys aren't that bad.
Yeah.
Maybe they just.
Hey, we've got all these short-term rentals. We could host them. All of a sudden we have some celebrity guests coming in. The aliens from outer space. I mean,
chilling in the 1% properties in the hot tub, they're gonna love it.
Yeah, they're gonna love it.
So the aliens, aliens, it doesn't scare you?
No, I don't.
Really?
It doesn't bother me at all.
I know. Now everything, like the movies, it's always so scary. They're gonna try and take us over. But I'm thinking maybe if they're coming here, the mothership is coming here, they probably need some help, right?
Maybe. Yeah.
I don't think it'll be that bad, but I would love to see one of those.
And if it is, wouldn't you worry about it?
Yeah. The green dudes on the White House lawn.
Yeah.
You know?
The Harvard scientists are where you lost me. Because,
really?
I don't feel like Harvard is on a really good run right now.
Yeah.
I feel like that there's been a lot of...
some no-nonsense going on?
I feel like that there's a lot of elite, self-proclaimed, elites that are... that just haven't really had a great run lately.
Yeah, once you put the word Harvard in front of stuff, it kind of gives it like a new connotation. Like, oh, they must mean,
Back in the day, you used to think, oh, man, those are the smartest of the smart.
Right, right.
Now you just feel like they're the entitled of the entitled.
Mm.
And so.
Watch it just be like a comet or something. It's not even a spacecraft.
They could be just trying to rile us up. And so whether it is or isn't, I guess I don't.
That's a conspiracy.
You know how I'm with a lot of this new stuff. I mean, it's the first time I hear about some of this stuff is when you bring it up. So. Yeah.
Well, all right. Here's another thing. So that was kind of the fun one. Here's another thing. WNBA. Some of the ladies at this recent game, they wore a shirt that said, "Pay us what you owe us." Now, this has become, at least on TikTok, I've seen like a viral controversy because some people are saying they're tone deaf, right? Oh. And so I go to Yahoo Sports and I pull up this article and it says, "The WNBA has never turned a profit in its 28-year history."
28 years, no profits.
No, never had a profit. The bitter truth, the NBA, which owns approximately 60% of the WNBA, has been subsidizing those losses since the league's inception in 1997. So, I mean, what do you have any hot takes on the WNBA? Because, I mean, I think you should let them play, right? It's beautiful. And women with any sport, let them play the sport. When it comes like pay us what you owe us, it gets dicey. It gets a little scary here. Now we're on ice. We're on thin ice because it's like, well, you guys aren't making any money.
Yeah.
So what do you mean pay us what you owe us? It's kind of tough, no?
Yeah. Well, first of all, the WNBA is like the woke arm of the NBA, which is already one of the most woke professional sports franchises out there as far as like – I used to play college basketball.
Right.
Love basketball. Mm-hmm. The 90s era Jordan and those guys love the NBA. I'm not a huge fan of the NBA, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
The WNBA is, I mean, when you start talking about professional sports, it's market driven, right?
Right.
Consumers are you know, they're going to like certain things, they're going to dislike certain things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a product that has made money for 28 years. They are on a bit of a run right now. Like, give them credit where credit's due. They've got They've got you know, a little bit more going on right now, and there's more people that are interested in it. Great. If the market's interested in it, you can start to make some money.
Right.
But all of a sudden, because you've got this little flash in the pan, and you and they're not. I don't even think they're projected to be profitable yet.
No.
I did hear that once they renegotiate some of their media contracts going in, I think, to the 2026 season, they probably will be profitable. But all of a sudden, what happens to all the, you know, the investors that were investing in this for 28 years? They probably want to get paid back a little bit of that money. Now, go negotiate your, you know, what you feel like is your fair share of that revenue when the media contracts come in and everything else. But wait till that happens. Wait to see where the profits are.
Right.
They maybe get paid. The market's going to pay you what you're worth. If people want to watch your games and show up to your games, you're going to get paid, right? But there's you can count on two fingers the players that are bringing crowds in right now.
Dude.
And if they're not playing, the ticket prices are $15 instead of, you know, $80, which is not that not that much, right? And so but if the market's, you know, saying, "Hey, listen, we like this product. We're going to we like watching these games." Great. Go go make your money.
Right.
But you're not entitled to money. And the problem that I have with the NBA and the WNBA is you still have this entitlement type of an attitude. And so
yeah, that's a good point.
That's my opinion is markets are fairly unforgiving. I'm a business guy.
Yeah.
You know, we run a business. If we don't put out a good product, you know, we can't sit and blame and say, "Well, pay us what we're worth because we think we're better than what the market is willing to pay us."
Right.
No, markets are going to pay you what you're worth, right? Yeah. If you provide a service. And so if they're providing an entertainment service and value, I mean, remember, what was the NBA player's name that was, she was over in Russia and got,
Yep.
I mean, she literally made a comment a few months back and was upset that their crowds were getting bigger because she said it was now she has to play in front of people that are making comments about her game and yelling at her. And, you know, if she was in a different arena that wasn't a home arena, people were booing her. And she said, "We didn't used to have to deal with that." And how, you know, poor me. I'm like, are you kidding me right now? That's sports. I mean, you love that. You feed on that. Then, you know, the energy of somebody booing you if you go into an opposing, you know, team's arena or whatever. She said she literally made a comment and said it was a nice place to bring your laptop and get some work done in a quiet environment is what she said. It, that she was mad that an NBA, WNBA game turned from that to playing in front of bigger crowds and more raucous crowds. I'm like, come on. So
that is a
yet on the other side, she's probably one of those wearing the shirt, "Pay me what you're worth." Well, guess what? You only get paid what you're worth when people are interested in what you have and the product you have. You have a product that is actually growing in popularity. So doesn't mean because I don't like it, doesn't mean other people don't. I mean, it is what it is. They think it is getting more, you know, interesting to people. And so maybe you get bigger contracts. Maybe, guess what, though, Brittany? You have to play in front of bigger crowds to make more money.
Dude, this is hilarious. This WNBA games used to be a chill, quiet place you could bring your laptop and relax. Maybe even get a little work done.
Yeah.
But now it's like there's a large gatherings of people watching us from the stands. Some of them are yelling crazy S-word what they're seeing, putting unfair pressure on us to score like we're there for their entertainment. And that's pretty gross. Bro, that's crazy.
Are you kidding me?
That's a crazy thing to say.
I know. It is crazy when you read it. I thought it was a joke the first time I heard that and saw that. So, yeah, my opinion of that. One, hey, listen, it's a professional sports franchise. It's an entertainment company.
Right.
You know, these women that are playing,
uh-huh.
if the market loves their product, they're going to get paid.
Right.
You know, you're not getting underpaid, I promose you that, when your league is losing $50 million a year.
Dude, that's so great. Right?
And so this stage in the game, if your product gets more interesting and people like watching you play, great.
Yeah.
You have one lady that happens to be bringing in a lot of viewers.
She is.
And like even like she you know, Brittany Grimer is, you know, she doesn't like playing when Caitlin Clark's in the game because more people are there watching her. Crazy.
That's crazy.
Watching her on purpose, she says.
Dude, I'm curious, like for the NHL money, what about like the women's basketball? Do you know anything about college women's basketball? I mean, is that like
NIL money?
NIL money? Is that like the same thing, do you know? I'm curious if they like, because well, maybe could you make more money in college basketball than
I think they can. Yeah. Well, especially those stars, right? I mean, like the way the NIL works is they're paying individual players for their star power, and then obviously they're, you know, not everybody's paid equally across the board there. No different. I think that they probably, my guess is Caitlin probably makes more money in college, but she's also, she's going to get her sponsorship. She's going to make way more money than what her salary is with the Indiana Fever, because the Indiana Fever is a losing organization, like a losing money type of an organization.
Right.
And so they not like losing
I see what games, you're saying. Yeah, right? Yeah.
I'm just saying like they don't make money. So they're not economically, they're not paying a ton of money, but some of these girls, you know, they're going to get, like, I mean, some of these women have 4 or 5 million Instagram followers. You don't think they have sponsorships. Yeah. You don't think they're making some money there. Mm. Absolutely they are.
Yeah.
And so ultimately they are their own product, right? They're their own brand.
Oh, that's interesting.
You know, so, you know, they're going to have those opportunities. Great. Go capitalize on those opportunities. But just to go out and be your like little entitled selves of pay us
more.
Not a huge fan.
Yeah,
I mean, it is what it, I don't.
It's hard. That's,
you know,
a
me,
hard
I don't
one.
Buy into any of that for across the board anyway.
Yeah, it's a tough ask when you phrase it like that, you know?
Right.
I think that's just a tough one. But okay. All right, man. So that was kind of like our trending newsy stuff that I had. Okay. Like I said, I recently stayed in an Airbnb, and I kind of had this, I thought it was like a buck wild, upside down experience. So I wanted to kind of just flesh it out with you and kind of go over some of this stuff. Okay, so here's the deal. We went to Ocean City, Maryland. Went to an apartment, I guess an apartment or a condo,
yeah,
I would say.
Condo.
On the beach. It was, the beach is fantastic. But here's the thing, dude. We're on our way there, right? We're getting the plane, and then we're driving there, and then one of the friends had already arrived. And then they text us, and they go, hey, guys, just a heads up. The Airbnb is not going to provide sheets for the bed. It's not going to provide, you're already smiling, dude. Okay, for people that are just listening, he just started smiling. No linens for the bed, no paper towels, no toilet paper, no pillowcases, no beach chairs, like none of that stuff. So just heads up, on your way, just make sure to go pick all that stuff up. And I thought, whoa, whoa, whoa. Okay, so then immediately my Vodacy mindset kicks in. I go, these people are definitely not operating in the top 1% of their market, right? So I go, okay. Why would somebody, this could be the first point, why would somebody not offer that kind of stuff? Even if you are going to compete in the middle of the market, why would you not offer toilet paper? That seems like just a necessity, no?
Yeah. You're,
what's the mindset?
That's a horrible host, yes. That's like the bottom of the rung.
Right.
I don't know why somebody would do that, honestly. Right. It's not the game where it's not even, that's not even really what you're competing with at the bottom in the middle of these markets at this stage in the game. If you're going to choose to operate that way, my guess is whoever booked that was literally shopping on price.
Yeah.
And they were just finding the cheapest option that was available. And that's what you're going to get when that's how you shop, right? It's the cost. You're not even getting the value out of the cost that you're paying, even if you're paying the lowest price in the market.
Right.
I mean, you're gonna travel with your own sheets, your own, your own bedding, your own toiletries. That's
wild.
Ridiculous.
And you know, that's an interesting point you brought up about the price, because I go, man, me and my girlfriend Nicole, we paid $500. Every couple paid $500. So what is that? There was, I don't know, there's three couples in there, and there was three in the other one. So it's at least $1,500 for what, 2 or 3 days? So I mean, it's a fair chunk of money, but if you're gonna operate in the top, right? You're gonna operate in the top. You could make so much money. No, if I'm gonna pay $500 for this cheap place, it's not even gonna give me toilet paper.
Right.
Imagine what it could be with fully decked out, with the amazing artwork and all the stuff we teach. It's like you could. It really opened my eyes. Like, oh wow, people that are operating at the top, really, you're the secretariat. In like horse terms, you're laps ahead of everybody else if that's how you're going to operate, was the first thing. Second thing was, I was curious about the cleaning fee, because I was at the last day I started doing the dishes, and then Nicole comes up to me and she goes, why are you doing the dishes? We paid a cleaning fee. And then one of the couples goes, no, you have to, it's in the rule book, you have to make sure all the dishes are clean. And I go, hold on a minute, okay, hold on, I don't mind doing the dishes because I don't mind doing it, but what is the point of the cleaning fee if I can't leave dishes in the sink are somewhat of a mess. Why would I pay to clean it? Right?
Yeah. Like it's, you know, it's, it was, this is more common than actually it should be, mm-hmm. where in the rule books, hosts are asking guests to do certain things for them mm-hmm. as, you know, like, but mm-hmm. you know, some of it is as simple as, hey, listen, can you please take the trash out because somebody might not be in there for a little while. We don't want, you know, whatever. Right. And fine. Right. Mm-hmm. Ask them to do that. But at the end of the day, like we don't ask our guests to do anything. It's like, hey, enjoy your stay. Have a great trip. We hope you travel safe, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Most people naturally semi-clean up after themselves anyways without asking.
Yeah. It. Yeah, it was.
Second, when you do ask, you have that reaction is, well, what am I paying for?
Right.
In this case, too, really, what are you paying for? Because they're asking you, they're not doing any linens, it doesn't sound like.
No.
That's what takes the longest time on cleaning is actually washing and drying and cleaning up and mm-hmm. resetting all the beds and doing all the linens. That mm-hmm. that takes the longest time. The, mm-hmm. the other stuff actually doesn't, I mean, you clean it up. But switching out the bedding is and cleaning the linens is what takes the longest amount of time.
Mm.
And so in that case, I mean.
So say somebody wants to have that, they want to give their guests the experience of, you don't even worry about anything. Just like, you know.
We don't have to do anything.
So would you then work the cleaning fee into the price or would you just put it in the rule book? Or how do you handle that?
No, well, guests are used to paying a room rate plus mm-hmm. a cleaning fee in taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Airbnb is starting to lump that all together.
Right.
So it's just you see everything together. The cleaning fee is in the rate of the room,
mm-hmm.
which I think is really smart because there was a lot of people that would have a cheaper room rate and they mm-hmm. would attract the guest, but then they would try to make it up for it on the cleaning fee. And then mm-hmm. they would charge double or triple what an actual cleaning mm-hmm. fee really was charging.
Mm-hmm.
And they start making money on that. So now you just lump it in together so the guest can see what your overall cost with room plus cleaning. So now the way that it is showing to the guest on Airbnb
mm-hmm.
as an actual like part of the room rate, you can lump it in or keep it out. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Cleaning to me is a full pass-through expense. When it comes to the rules,
right?
I think it's crazy to ask your guests to do a whole bunch of laundry list of items before they check out. I really don't like it.
Yeah.
I think it is one, most people are probably not paying attention to it except for the person who booked it thinking, well, I don't want to get charged an extra fee because you guys didn't do what we were supposed to on the rules.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have a laundry list of things, of to-dos for your guests before they check out, that's unless it is like a off-the-grid, remote type of a cabin that's check-in, like self-check-in, self-checkout, and mm-hmm. then the next guest is coming in and it's really not getting a full turnover. There are off-grid properties that are kind of like that.
Right. That makes sense.
That would be the exception. Right. That you're going to a property knowing that you've got to kind of leave it the way you showed up mm-hmm. because it's so off-grid that it doesn't get a turnover every time.
Right.
Right. And so those types of properties are a little bit different. Normally, like 99% of the properties out there, you know, if you want to operate at the top of the market, be an amazing host, get amazing reviews, do away with your to-do list for your guests when they check out.
And the other thing was, say it's our last night, right? But you check out at 9, 10 a.m., right? So then your last night, everyone wants to have a great last night out. Last night out, let's go out, let's go have dinner, let's go do whatever. So you're up really late and then you got to wake up early in the morning to check out, but then you wake up early in the morning and then you got to clean the linens, then you got to do the dishes, then you got to take the trash out, then you got to wipe stuff down. And you're crazy. Like, bro, this is too much, man. What are we paying for this for? And then it kind of gets a sour feeling. You leave with a sour feeling, and that kind of sucks because then you don't even remember like the good parts of the trip or the good parts. So that was kind of I'm very curious. And then another thing I wanted to touch on was how important the guest book is. Because when you open that thing up, looking for the Wi-Fi password, and then you have all of these rules, and it's not written tonally in a kind voice.
Yeah.
dude, it was a real like, hold on a minute. They just kind of, you know, and it's not a good feeling. How should somebody prepare their guest book or have that ready for the guest? What's the best way?
So first of all, you're exactly right. And this is something that people do all the time. Hosts lay the law down with their guest book, kind of in a sense. Mm-hmm. And the tone is, hey, here's the rules. You better follow them. Here's the consequences. If you don't do this, this is what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. And it has this horrible tone to set the stage for an amazing stay. Mm-hmm. Your guest book should be there as a resource for your guest. And find the Wi-Fi password, tell them your favorite restaurants. Mention, if you're going to mention some house rules and some things that you that are important, you've got to do it in a tone that is like, hey man, I hope you enjoy this property as much as we do. Here's some things we found helpful when we're doing, when we're lighting the fireplace. We're going to, you know, do this so that you don't have any issues with, you know, smoke backing up or whatever, right? Like say it in a tone that is more of a resource and a helpful hint instead of I'm laying the law down and you better follow my rules or else this is going to happen.
That, right? That was ours.
That is way more common than you realize in this game. And immediately it sets the tone for not a very fun stay.
Right.
And immediately, one, you, the nicer you are, the more you give your guests. Like it's it, when I go, when I furnish properties, we use high-end furnishings. We use high-end artwork. We use high-end and spend a lot of money on different amenities throughout the property. And a lot of people are like, man, aren't you worried about that? It's just a renter. The more money we spend, the nicer the experience that we provide, the better our guests treat the property by far. The worst ones are when we see properties, we don't do this, but we see properties all the time that have that tone of, here's the rules, here's the regulations. If you don't follow them, this is the consequences. And you have all this laid out. And immediately that tone is, the guest is like, man, screw this person. You know, I'm not, I'm, you know, they don't care about your stuff. They don't take your shoes off. They don't sweep up after themselves. They're not getting, like when you treat them like that, they ultimately naturally, it's almost like they, that law of reciprocity in reverse happens. They're going to treat you bad too. And you don't want that for, so it's a recipe for not a great stay, not a great guest experience, but also not a great way for the guest to treat or leave your property as well, because they're not, there's no motivation for them to do it. You're like, hey, listen, you treat people how you want to get treated, and that goes good or bad. And you treat people bad, you're probably going to get bad in return. And and unfortunately, most people, that's how human nature is and operates. As a competitor in the space, and I always tell people, it's so, this is an arena that is always going to be a mom and pop business, so we are always going to have hosts doing this kind of stuff that you're talking about. It's an arena that is so much easier to operate at the top of the markets than people realize if they just take the steps. It's no harder to operate in the top than it is in the middle or bottom of the market. It's just a different approach. But so for part of me as a competitor is like, just do your thing, because I'm going to crush you. When we compete against you.
Keep those books.
Do how you want to do it, because we'll absolutely crush you. The issue with that is, on the flip side is, the more we can raise the bar in the industry, the more that we can, like, short-term rentals are a mainstream asset class. If hosts aren't continuing to raise the bar and stories like that get out, you have people like you that really liked, you know, would be resonate toward a short-term rental. They can travel as a group and everything else. And you're like, man, that last one wasn't very fun. I'm just going to go to the predictability of a hotel. And so as a as a host that is investing in this space and wanting to be in it long-term, you want to see everybody else raise the bar as well. Because there's still going to be plenty of money to be spent by the consumer in the top of these markets. And so, you know, it's two sides of a coin, because part of you is like, ah, as a competitor, I'll just crush you in the market. It also, though, as a long-term investor in in a space, we want the consumer to still have a very good taste in their mouth for staying at short-term rentals. And the more and more hosts that are out there that are, you know, doing the things that you're talking about doing, making people bring their own linens and stuff, it's like, okay, that just lowers the lowers the bar in the industry, which means the consumer is not going to be nearly as attracted if you have more and more people doing that. Now that is a rarity and an exception, I would say, anymore. You don't see that very often. So the fact that you guys had a property like that,
it was wild. But okay, so that, I love, that's a really good mindset of wanting to raise the bar. But I mean, I don't think I would go back to the hotel, especially with the group. You know, I like the Airbnb. I like the verb. I want to stay at the short-term rental. But now after having this experience, it definitely makes me open my eyes and go, guys, why are you like shopping for price? Let's just, if you need to give me, if we need to go another month to save up some more money here, guys, let's get the better one. Why are we choosing the worst of the worst here, guys? Or what, I mean, you know what I'm saying? So I think staying in one of those, I go, oh, let's just spend the money. Once you have a bad experience, you're just going to shop for the top.
100%. And that, you're a perfect example of that. Is saying, hey, listen, the price is not the ultimate decision maker new moving forward. No. You're going to make sure you have certain things, and you're mm-hmm. going to make sure certain boxes are checked, and you're going to say, hey, listen, I'd mm-hmm. rather spend a little bit more money.
Oh yeah.
And have a more predictable, better experience.
Oh yeah.
Versus saving a few bucks and staying in an experience like that, because you still, it's still an expensive vacation. Uh-huh. You're still taking time off work.
Yes.
You're still traveling.
Yes.
You're still doing all that stuff. You're like, okay, that at the end of the day, I'd rather pay a little bit more mm-hmm. and have a better experience all the way around.
I totally agree. Question for you. Why doesn't the property manager step in and go, hey, your guest book, your tone is really bad in here. Let's rewrite this. Why doesn't somebody come, the property manager come in and help along the way?
Did it have a property manager? Or was it self-managed? You know,
I literally have no idea, but I would guess they should.
A professional property manager should not be doing that stuff. First of all, my guess is this was self-managed.
Yeah.
A professional and property managers aren't, you know, they're not all equally created equal and everything's the same either. There's good ones, there's bad ones.
Right.
And they might not be operating at a high level either. But my guess is, my intuition is that was self-managed. A professional property manager is probably not doing that.
Mm. Yeah, man, that was a really, here's my other question. Okay, so that property, right, it wasn't the best. It clearly didn't have the Vodacy signature room. It didn't have the high-end furnishings, clearly, right, based off what I'm telling you. So then as someone that's listening to this podcast and they go, okay, well, I mean, Ocean City, Maryland, me and my family like going there. Let's get a short-term rental. Would you think it would be smarter to buy out that person and go, okay, I already know that, like, they're in a good location and stuff. Let me buy it and renovate it and flip it. Or should they just go, I guess the question is, would it be better in this scenario to flip a property or just start from scratch with a new one? Because if you flip it, in my mindset, I go, well, they've had it for a long time. What if, like, the plumbing and stuff is bad over time, over use, right? Or is it better just to get a new one, start
like
from scratch?
Like a build, a new one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's pros and cons to both, right? Yeah. I mean, obviously, there's homes that don't have a lot of deferred maintenance mm-hmm. that have been, you know, kept up on, and capital improvements have been made over the years. Mm-hmm. You know, they can be great properties. Some properties have deferred maintenance, and you get them at a discount, and it's worth your time to go put in, you know, bring it back up to speed, because you're getting a return on that extra investment that you're making into that property. You're having some forced appreciation.
Mm-hmm.
Other times, building brand new, it's kind of nice because you can purpose build it. You can have, you know, brand new of everything, and mm-hmm. you don't have a lot of capital expenses for the first 5 to 8 years probably before some of those systems need to be starting to think about replacing.
Okay, so it kind of just depends.
It totally depends. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. In some markets, you know, it's not an option to buy land and build.
Right.
There are some markets that are very established.
That's true.
And your option is buying an existing property, especially in a lot of the major markets. Most of your top proximity locations mm-hmm. are already going to be built on. Most of them are going to be, you know, you're going to have, you know, there's only a certain amount of beachfront property, and a lot of it's been cobbled up.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, all right, good point. All right, now that was my STR stuff. Now we got sent in two questions. Email your questions, support@vodacy.com. Here we go. Here's the first one. Can OTAs use the same rental property name on their platforms? For example, my rental name is, I'll just say, Eagles Landing. My property's name is Eagles Landing. Can someone else who has their property listed on one of the same OTAs use mine as the same name for their property? So does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
The answer is yes. You can. Okay. I don't think any of the OTAs, I know specifically Airbnb doesn't, but I don't think any of them disallow this, like a duplicate mm-hmm. property name. Somebody mm-hmm. saying Eagles Landing. In fact, Eagles Landing, that would be one that if you searched it on Airbnb, there's probably dozens of Eagles Landings in different markets and everything mm-hmm. else. But even in the mm-hmm. same market, there's no restriction on that. Now, is that
smart?
Yeah. Do you want to copy somebody? No. What if somebody starts copying you?
Mm-hmm.
It can be frustrating for sure because you're like, we've been kind of branding that name.
Right.
So, you know, think about when you start to pick a good name mm-hmm. and you start to brand it and you get the websites and you start calling yourself that on mm-hmm. Airbnb. That's just one aspect of branding, and somebody being able to copy you on the OTAs is an option, right? Mm. And they can do that. So sometimes we try to be a little more descriptive. We try to think about our guest avatar in that name.
Right.
But it's not, if it's descriptive, like I have one that's called the Lakeside Treehouse. I guarantee you there's more than one Lakeside Treehouse on Airbnb.
Right.
Maybe not in my market, but what if another one popped up? At least it's descriptive enough that if both of us are attracting, like somebody's looking for a treehouse that's lakeside, maybe they find both of us and I can win them out based on my listing. Mm. So it can be frustrating if you feel like somebody copied you. Most of the time, most most likely they're probably not copying you. They probably just kind of came up with a similar name, right, especially if it's something generic like Eagle's Landing or even Lakeside Treehouse.
Yeah.
Right. But I try to be descriptive. Like Eagle's Landing would tell me that I'm perched atop a hill. I've got probably amazing views. At least it's descriptive enough that the few that are named that, at least, you know, we start to operate in a category that the consumer starts to narrow down between a handful of properties instead of all of them on there. Right.
So yeah, but then you can still beat them out in other ways.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about it too much. I mean, it's not a restrictive, you know, platform to say, hey, listen, you've trademarked and copyrighted that name and nobody else can have it.
Right.
That's not the case. Somebody else can name their property that.
But you would never recommend somebody copy someone else's name.
No, I don't see why you would. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. If you see somebody else out there with the same name, right, I mean, you're better off trying to pick a more unique name for your property, for sure.
Mm-hmm. And how does that tie in with like the direct bookings? You know, if you have the lakesidetreehouse.com, but then what if the other guy has lakesidetreehouse.net or whatever?
Yeah.
Then you kind of now your direct booking is now going to, it could be going to them.
Yeah, could. So if you're running a bunch of advertisements, most of the time, most advertisements nowadays are people aren't typing in web addresses. Right. They're just clicking links. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't, you know, you usually are running traffic to your site because most people are just clicking links at this stage. But if I buy lakesidetreehouse.com, I'm buying lakesidetreehouse.net. I'm buying,
you're buying
three or four of them. Yeah. So when we run down that road, we definitely try to buy all of it.
Okay. Yeah. Last question here. Why does Vodacy give members lifetime access
inside of our coaching?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One, I've always said, I believe this is a process, not an event. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people, like the majority of our members, we have a lot of people that are on their fourth, fifth, sixth properties. They've been with us for 4 or 5 years. We have case studies that we have on our success story page of people that have built a portfolio over the last 3 to 5 years. Mm-hmm. This is a process that we're trying to build, right? This is we're building a portfolio to help us build, like we say, that life that we don't want to take a vacation from. That doesn't happen overnight.
Right.
And so selling a 6-month program or a year program has never made sense to me. Right. I feel like, hey, listen, if we're going to run down this road together and you're going to follow a blueprint and you're going to need help along the way, every property is a little bit different. Everything's a little bit unique. Mm. And also, I love the fact that it's very, very hard this is my biased opinion, I guess. Mm-hmm. And there's very few people that can compete with us at this stage in the game because of the collective experience inside of Vodacy.
Right.
You have to realize how many, we have thousands of members in there operating at a very high level and understanding how many hundreds of thousands of probably millions of hours of experience that is starting to accumulate inside of that community. Mm. If we just had people coming in and out every 6 months or 12 months, that cumulative experience couldn't start to parlay the way it has and start to really snowball the way it has.
Right.
This is this has become so much more than like my program anymore. This is the Vodacy recipe, signature recipe. It's not Sean's signature recipe, right? And because of, I think a lot of that has to do with being able to be part of this journey with people that are willing to be in a community long term. And so you know, a lot of people will say that's a crazy way to do business. I can agree on the business side. It probably is, seems crazy, but on the back end side, part of our business that we're building is a portfolio of vacation rentals. If we can all leverage and tap into that collective experience and people, one, have the ability to be part of that lifetime, but also they give back for the lifetime, right? It's not just take.
Right.
Once, you know, they start buying property, number two, guess what? They're starting to learn things and they're gaining experience that we didn't have on that same, because every acquisition's a little bit unique. And so this cumulative experience and then being able to give back like for the long term it's just exponential returns and just getting so much further ahead. A solo entrepreneur that's running down, solo investor running down that road, there's no possible way they can accumulate that type of experience in probably in their lifetime of investing at this stage in the game.
Wow. It also gives in my opinion, kind of gives like a family feel to
sure.
it. It's,
yeah, exactly.
It kind of makes you feel like you're buying into a group that's like gonna be here. It's not like a timer all of a sudden started on you. And like, what happens if shit happens, man?
Yeah,
something happens. Your right. family, something happens.
Exactly.
Life happens, and you go, man, I don't think I'm gonna be able to do it this year. But then at the end of the year, they go, oh, hey, well, since yep. you're gonna sign on another year, it's gonna cost this money. But no. You're a part of this. You're gonna be here for life.
How often do we have that in the community? Mm-hmm. Hey guys, I'm back. Mm-hmm. I had to take a little bit of time off. This yeah. is, you know, some things happened in my life, but I'm back in action.
Yeah.
And they made a significant investment when they decided to make the decision. Mm-hmm. And then, like you said, life happens, mm-hmm. and they can put a pause on that because that's not the road that they were able to run down because mm-hmm. they were focused on some more urgent matters yeah. at the time, right? Whatever yeah. those were. But that happens all the time. Mm-hmm. And they have the ability to now come back and say, hey, listen, I'm ready to roll and let's get after it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of benefits to it. There's a lot of ways and reasons I believe in it.
Mm-hmm.
I pay a small fortune to coaches, and mm-hmm. I don't have any of them that tell me I'm making a good business decision doing
right.
it.
But right.
that has never changed over 6 years, and it's mm-hmm. something that we believe in and something that we continue to double down on. But I think that we get amazing returns because of it. Because yeah. like you said, it becomes a family. You're in it long term, and mm-hmm. good, bad, or ugly, we're sharing those experiences together and that collective knowledge and mm-hmm. being able to leverage that collective knowledge to mm-hmm. really continue to raise the bar and just stay so far ahead of the pack at this stage in the game. It's pretty fun.
Yeah. I love it, man. Yeah. That's it. That's all. Everything That's I have it. For today.
Okay.
Email support@vodyssey.com. Come join. Come be a part of the family.
Yeah. Come join. Come be a part of the family. You want to have a conversation about that? If you have a question, you just want to answer mm-hmm. it on the podcast, email those into support@vodyssey.com as well. We will probably be back to either apple juice yeah. or real whiskey next time because yeah. this fake whiskey was not something that we're yeah. going to probably double down on.
It has an interesting smell to it.
I know. I can't figure out what it is.
It's got an interesting smell. Anyway, sorry. Okay. Sorry to interrupt.
All right, guys. We'll wrap it up. We appreciate you spending your time with us. We know it's valuable. Thanks for spending it with us. Our goal is to help you walk into this game with your eyes wide open. If you got value out of this show, know somebody else that would get value out of that as well and be a part of these conversations. Share the show. Those things help us. We appreciate it very, very much in this day and age where we're inundated with all kinds of information. If you can share the show, those things help us. If you have more than 30 seconds, like it, review it on whatever platform you're watching or listening on. And the final most important thing I ask you at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today to start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends. Cheers, buddy.
Cheers.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey, Grace, is there a website? Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit vodyssey.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.